To examine how China responds to unrest by its minority populations, we turn now to Robbie Barnett. He's a professor of modern Tibetan studies at Columbia University. Good morning.
Good morning.
It was just over a year ago that we saw a very harsh crackdown by China on demonstrators in Tibet. Now, those demonstrations like these had turned from peaceful to quite deadly. Is China's response to the Uyghurs any different than it was to the Tibetans?
Well, we're not sure whether they intended it to be different, but it certainly has turned out very differently. Tibet was locked down and closed off. No foreigners could go there, and foreign journalists weren't allowed in except with very tight escorts and very rarely. But in Xinjiang, the Chinese police and the Chinese propaganda officials moved very quickly to take journalists to the city to show them the damage that had been caused. And this is really a very interesting development, because when those journalists got there, as you know, they saw a lot of more protests happening in front of them from both sides, both by Uyghurs and by Chinese against each other. So this is something we haven't really seen before, a Chinese state that seems to be being quite open with the foreign press and allowing them into the city. That's very different from what happened in Tibet last year.
Well, how do the demands of the Uyghurs compare to the demands of the Tibetans? Are they similar, and maybe the response by the Chinese? Is that to do with what they're demanding?
Well, they do appear to be very similar indeed. And in fact, this is one of the things that unfortunately has led to a lot of Chinese popular opinion bracketing these two kinds of situations together as being the same. It's certainly the case that one of the touch paper issues for both communities is immigration. And I think in the long term, the Chinese leaders are really going to have to sit back and say who was responsible for the last 15, 20 years of really breakneck immigration policies in both areas.
Now, immigration, you're talking about the Han majority immigrating into these regions.
Yes, well, it's technically non-local people, most of whom are Han, who are sent to these regions. Not officially sent, they're not really forced to go or anything in most cases. They're drawn in by the new market economy.
And viewed as taking over or the culture, if you will, of that was there.
That's right. It's really the government allows the market to push most of this migration of the Chinese into these areas. In Xinjiang, it's much, much greater numbers are involved than in Tibet. And in Tibet, it only happens really in the towns. But in Xinjiang, the whole of the north of the area has really become a Chinese zone. So it's much more serious in Xinjiang than it is in Tibet. But really, it's a big question mark about why the Chinese government didn't see these problems coming. They're not the only problems. They're huge historical problems in both areas, rather different, actually, because Tibet effectively operated as without any Chinese involvement for decades, some people say for centuries. Xinjiang's been under China a lot longer. But the problems are that the Chinese government seems very reluctant to look at problems in its policies. What we don't know is whether the extraordinarily unpleasant violence last weekend in Urumqi will push Chinese leaders to finally reconsider their policies in these areas about migration, also about language. There's less and less local language teaching in Xinjiang. There's less and less religious freedom allowed, especially for young people in Xinjiang. This is also happening in Tibet. These are policies that really the Chinese government needs to look at. But so far in Tibet, they haven't considered these policies at all. And we just don't know whether the much higher level of violence in Xinjiang will force them to make changes.
Professor Barnett, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Robbie Barnett is a professor of modern Tibetan studies at Columbia University.